We are privileged to have as our presenter today Dr. Blair Stonechild. Dr. Stonechild is a member of the Musqueam-Tongue Soto First Nation in Saskatchewan. He obtained his BA from McGill and MA and PH degrees from Regina, and in 1976 was the first academic hired by the Saskatchewan Indian Federated College, SIFC. Blair has been Dean of Academics and Executive Director of the Saskatchewan Indian Federated College, now FNUC. He co-authored with Dr. Bill Weiser, Loyal Till Death, Indians in the Northwest Rebellion, which won the Saskatchewan Book Award and was the finalist for the Governor General's Literary Award in 1997. Dr. Stonechild's book on First Nations post-secondary policy, The New Buffalo, Aboriginal Post-Secondary Policy in Canada, 2006, was a finalist for the Saskatchewan Book Award. And he is in the process of publishing his biography, Buffy St. Marie, It's My Way. Blair was a trustee of the Canadian Museum of Civilization from 1990 to 1998. He has done extensive consulting on Aboriginal education. Blair is married to Sylvia and is father to Michael, Rachel, and Gabriel. Dr. Stonechild, welcome.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'm not sure if this is working. I guess it is. Good. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, and it's a real pleasure to be here. And I guess I'm speaking about someone who I understand is near and dear to the hearts of Unitarians, Buffy St. Marie. And I also was inspired by Buffy when I was in university in the late 60s and early 70s. You know, Buffy was one of the singers from a point of view of Aboriginal students who really stood out and spoke out for the rights of Aboriginal people. And so she was very inspirational and really helped a lot of us, as we struggled for our rights and that type of thing. So, I discovered that Buffy didn't have a major biography written, so I thought, gee, this sounds like a really interesting project. So that's how I got to write her biography. And of course, she's originates locally from Paiapot First Nation, was raised in Massachusetts, and really has just a fascinating story of someone who, has faced great obstacles in life and yet has risen above them and, has just taken the high road. All the way, in some ways like Nelson Mandela has. So what I want to do, because there is so much to say about Buffy, is I have a PowerPoint, and as I go through the PowerPoint, I'll, speak about some of the major points, and I also have a bit of music, and So let me start on that, and of course there'll be time for questions and that type of thing after. Okay, so I think this is on here. Whoops. How do we get the... there we go, okay. That's the trick?
That's the trick.
Okay, thanks, Jim. I've just got to warm up here, or what... It's got to warm up, okay? Okay, so what I thought I would do is just talk about various aspects of Buffy's life, because when I started researching her story, I thought, like many others, that she's mainly just a folk singer. And of course, that's how she really came to be known, publicly. But what I found out about Buffy is that she has so many other dimensions to her.
There we go. Yep.
So I hear some humming here and stuff. So. There it comes, yeah. Okay, good. So, okay. So, as I mentioned, Buffy originated here in Saskatchewan, but was adopted into a family in Massachusetts. This would have been around the early 1940s, actually. And so when I interviewed her and actually traveled to Maine and Massachusetts, where she had grown up and spoken to different people, including members of her family, and she told me that she had a very challenging childhood because of prejudice and just being adopted. And the thing, I guess, which really kind of opened up her eyes as she describes it, is when she ended up getting the chance to go to university. So she ended up going to the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. And it's there that, as she says, the world kind of opened up for her, and she began to find out about a lot of things, including, of course, the struggle of American Indians, for the right. And she realized how the history had been distorted. And the other thing about Buffy is that she always had a sort of an innate ability to produce music. Even when she was a child, like 2 or 3 years old, she was talking about how she was attracted to the piano and how she was attracted to music, and she would experiment. And so as a teenager, she actually taught herself how to play guitar, and so by the time she got to university, she was actually singing her own songs. And some of them were protest songs, like, for example, "Now That the Buffalo's Gone" is one example of them. So this picture here actually is one of the ones before she really got seriously into the music business. As a matter of fact, she had trained to be an educator, and she had taken she had been really interested in Asian studies and actually taken a minor in Asian studies at university, and was actually planning to go to study in India when it happened that she also decided to take a trip to Greenwich Village. And in Greenwich Village, that's the time when the folk music scene was just burgeoning. And for example, one of the first people who gave her advice was Bob Dylan. He told her where to go and stuff. And so she tried out there, and she was she just had this, like I say, she had this real ability to sort of sing in a very inspirational way. And she was noticed by a record producer, Vanguard Records, and she was offered a contract, so she had to go back and think. And so she decided that she would actually give the music industry a try. So this would be around that time period. And the reason I can tell is because after she got into show business, she started wearing more fancy clothes and that type of thing. So okay, this one is a picture of her and her her father, Emil Pipot. She, after she got made some money off music, she began to travel around, became really interested in reconnecting with the roots, and did reconnect with Emil Pipot and Clara, who were, of course, from the Pipot Reserve. So this picture was actually taken out at Fort San, I understand. Okay, the next picture is a picture of Sheldon Peters Wolfchild, who is a Dakota person from the United States whom she married and met. He was actually a Vietnam veteran and an actor. And they had their son Cody, who is her only child, and he's in his 20s now. And this picture, I believe, was actually taken on the set of Sesame Street. So sometimes when you mention Buffy St. Marie to some people, they think of Sesame Street right away. It depends on what generation you're talking to people about. That's kind of a snapshot of her personal life. And I know sometimes people say, well, what's something surprising that you didn't know about Buffy St. Marie? And one of the things I say is she actually had a number of relationships with different different people in life, including some people who are well known in the music industry and the and in the entertainment industry. And apparently, with Sheldon, my understanding is that he was a Vietnam vet, and when he went to Hawaii, he got post-traumatic stress syndrome. And so, you know, that was part of the reason why they sort of went their own ways after. And, of course, I have all these details in my book here, which is actually published now. So I actually brought some copies here in case anybody's interested in buying some later. Okay, so I spoke about the different roles of Buffy St. Marie, and these are some of the roles that I found out. So she's originally known as a folk singer, but there's many other things. Of course, a social activist with her... with her protest songs, and of course Universal Soldier, which I'll play later, which was the song which really propelled her into national and international consciousness, because it became sort of an informal anthem of the anti-Vietnam War protest. And that also had consequences because she became the brunt of a ban on so-called the government would consider people like that to be troublemakers, right? So she actually bore the brunt of a backlash from the U.S. government, which actually affected her career. But she was also an actor, and there's Sesame Street, and there's also many others. There's actually about 10 other productions of various sorts that she's appeared in. And it said that she was actually quite talented in that area. Digital artist. There's actually a picture here. Yeah. So she was actually a pioneer in digital art. She became fascinated by computers when they came out in the 1980s, and was really fascinated by the idea that you could create images using, she calls it painting with light. You know, so, you know, she liked the idea that, you know, you weren't messing with necessarily with you know, with paints and that type of thing, which, you know, like you know, can create, you know, which have a different challenge. This was a different type of medium where, as she says, there's something like 10,000 colors you can use, and you know, you can actually get a lot of really interesting effects out of them. And so she's created these really large, interesting visual productions. And we actually have this one here at the First Nations University. Okay, internet educator. She also, at the same time as she became interested in the computer, she also became interested in the internet. And she was one of the first to connect classrooms in different parts of the world. She wanted to connect especially Indian reservations with schools and cities. And she created a platform. It's called the Cradle Board, which actually still exists and still functions and flourishes, which connects school children in different parts of the world, and they can exchange information about their lives, and it creates cultural understanding. And then she's a philanthropist because she did make a lot of money off of her music, and she contributed to a scholarship fund which helped First Nations students. And she's also contributed to other causes, including the internet site. Okay, so she describes herself as a very creative person, and but at the same time, I found out that she's also a very spiritual person, because going back to, as I mentioned, University of Massachusetts, she was very interested in Asian philosophies and religions. And I found out as I got to know her and I interviewed her that she has also this deep-seated interest in spirituality. She considers to be music as something that comes from a divine source. And you know, she believes that it's a form of communication with the spirit. So just briefly talk about some of the main points that I found. Of course, there was her original interest in Asian philosophy and religion at the University of Massachusetts. She spent a lot of time with elders here in Saskatchewan, and learn about the spirituality. And it's interesting. It's something I've been studying as well. And I've been working with a lot of elders. And, you know, I've learned how they describe our true being as being spirits. We're actually spirit beings as our true being, our true nature. And that our human nature is basically a temporary voyage that we have on, you know, like in the course of a longer voyage. So there's that type of interest that she had. And she's also been known to participate in Baha'i. She has friends who are in Baha'i. She's been to Baha'i conventions and that type of thing. And then the last one, which I had never heard of before, and you know, I really found interesting, and I thought I just kind of highlight a bit because, you know, it's something that I thought was so obscure that I should, you know, like, but it seemed to be something that she was very, very sort of enthusiastic about, was this what's called Urantia. Has anybody ever heard of that, Urantia? No? Okay. Yeah, I kind of thought that because I hadn't heard about it. So this is the one of the main people involved with it. He actually compiled what's called the Urantia book. And what Urantia book is, it's actually this information that was understood to have been channeled by a group of disincarnate beings, spiritual beings, to Wilfred Kellogg, who was actually an adopted child of John Kellogg, who was a philanthropist. And you know, my understanding from the reading is that Wilfred Kellogg was kind of like an oddball. You know, he, you know, I think some people questioned his intelligence and stuff, but all of a sudden he started channeling this information, which was produced in a book of over 2,000 pages, which, if you're interested, is actually also available on the internet. You can actually Google it, and you can actually download the whole thing. And so this physician whom John Kellogg knew, a guy named William Sandler, who was a skeptic of the paranormal, took an interest in this and, you know, began to compile all of these, you know, I guess you call them readings or something like that. And so he ended up with this book of over 2,000 pages, which describes the place of humans and Earth in a larger cosmology, planets and galaxies, and the name that was used for Earth was Urantia. And interesting enough, the largest section of the book identifies Christ as the most important spiritual teacher to come to Earth. Urantia book teaches that humans are on a long process of spiritual evolution. Now, Urantia is not an organized or centralized religion, but its philosophy is kept alive through various study groups. So I found that interesting, and, you know, Buffy had told me, you know, quite a bit about this, that she had really found this to be something which, you know, which she found to be a meaningful thing, right? So I was very curious about it, but as I say, it's not something that's very well known. But I thought, you know, might be of some interest here. Okay, so we're down to the music, and I noticed you played Star Walker, so I won't have to play that, but I will play two other ones. Of course, Universal Soldier, which is the one, you know, the song which first brought her to, you know, the attention of the world. And then the other song I'll play is actually the one that was her most successful song of all time. It's Until It's Time For You To Go, which is a love song. And she says that some of her most successful songs are songs that she never really expected to receive any attention. Like there's Until It's Time For You To Go, and there's also Up Where You Belong, which is a song that won an Academy Award. And this one, of course, was popularized by Elvis Presley, who adopted it as his love song. So I'll play Universal Soldier, and then Until It's Time To Go, and then you've seen Star Walker, so that then we'll have questions. Okay, so I can just oops. Okay. There we go.
one very close to me, okay?
Okay, there's a microphone.
That's right. That'd be right over there. Okay, we're going to do the best we can here. We have a bullhorn on me, and we have a mic on the guitar. This is a song about individual responsibility for war. A soldier for a thousand years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jay, a Protestant, a Baptist, and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada. Fighting for the USA, and he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan, and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way, and he's fighting for democracy, and fighting for the Reds, said it's for the peace of all. Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon to a war. And without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. But his orders come from far away, no more. They come from him. This is not the way we put an end to war.
So many other well-known singers have sung that song, and not everybody realized that it was Buffy Sainte-Marie who had written it. But she actually wrote it after she had... seen soldiers returning in San Francisco airport from Vietnam before the time that most people realized there was a war going on. Okay. So let me see here if we can get back. Whoops. Okay, we'll try until it's time for you to go as the next one here.
You're not a dream, you're not an angel, you're a man, and I am not a queen, I'm a woman. Space in the lives that we planned, and here we'll stay until it's time for you to go. Yes, we're different, worlds apart, we're not the same. We laughed and played at the start, like in a game. You could have stayed outside my heart, but in you came. He'll stay until it's time for you to go. Don't ask why. Don't ask how. Don't ask forever.
until it's time for you to go.
Song, which was Starwalker, but that's astutely been played already, so that's basically my presentation. I don't know if we have time for questions.
Thank you very much indeed, Blair. So I know that there will be questions. First one. Bunch of them already. So I will ask, go around, and I will start with Sandra. I think you had your hand up first.
Thank you so much for that presentation. It was really interesting, especially to those of us that are in the same age group and have followed Buffy over the years. Mm-hmm. The events of this week and Nelson Mandela's death, but also all the biographical information that has come forward and so forth, have made me think so deeply about what is going on here in Canada. And just as you were speaking, I noticed that you did mention, I think you mentioned Buffy and Nelson Mandela at the beginning. And I was thinking about the people that came together to make things happen in South Africa. And, you know, Buffy wasn't really alone in her concerns and so forth. Have there been other people that have been working kind of in the same direction as Buffy St. Marie that have helped sort of to move things forward in Canada and the U.S.? And, you know, I'm concerned that there isn't a stronger group working together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting question. And, of course, Buffy really became prominent around 1963, 64, 65, which is around the time that the whole race issue was coming to the fore, that type of thing. I guess you might say the real raising of consciousness in the States about American issues is often traced back to the occupation of Alcatraz in 1969, I believe it was, because that, you know, that got national attention. There was in the States, because the system there is a bit different, the reservation system is a bit different. There was tend to be a lot of division and corruption in those communities. Some of the ones that she ended up working with most were people in the American Indian movement who believe that you had to take a very radical approach, a very confrontational approach to get the attention. Of course, the United States is different than Canada as well because it's such a large monolithic country as a, you know, compared to Canada. But she... While she helped the American Indian movement, she also criticized their style. She thought, you know, that it could be more balanced in some ways. So, yeah, so she did work down there, and she also was, I think through her songs, she, as an individual, played a large role in inspiring people on an individual basis. Here in Canada, I would say that it revolved largely around the Indian policy of 1969, the termination policy, which galvanized a lot of leaders to do something about it. And people like Harold Cardinal are people that are usually pointed to as being, you know, some of the leaders who helped to lead the movement towards, you know, justice for Aboriginal people. So it's a bit of a different situation, but the interesting thing, of course, is the time periods are very much similar. Like 1969 would be an interesting year because as Nelson Mandela says, that was probably his lowest point in terms of his own experience being persecuted and realizing how, you know, helpless he was, and you know, that was kind of like the lowest point in his life. And so you have also the occupation of Alcatraz, and you have the announcement of the White Paper policy in Canada, which proposed termination of Indian rights. So that seems to be a bit of a pivotal year for Native Americans anyway, who, you know, the movement of Native Americans seemed to kind of follow a few years later than the blacks, for example, the movement of, you know, black awareness and that type of thing.
I remember, I think you said that as she became an activist, that there was pressure against her. Mm-hmm. Did you say that was from the government, or what source?
Yeah, it was. She was becoming very well known in the mid-60s. She was not only becoming known in the United States, but she was also becoming known internationally in England, Australia, other places. And she was kind of mystified because when she came back to the United States, she'd find that her sales weren't very good. And she couldn't understand it because her fans were still requesting her music. But the sales numbers were dropping. And she inquired with Vanguard, which was her music distributor, and Vanguard said, no, they're distributing her records and stuff. So something was happening, and what was happening apparently was that under both Johnson and Nixon, apparently Johnson had started it, he created a blacklist of performers who were, you know, protesters and who were considered to be un-American, and there was a couple of them, and Buffy St. Marie was one of them. And so what they were doing is they were actually intercepting her music shipments, so they weren't getting to the stores, and as a result, her airtime was declining to the point where she actually thought that maybe the times were changing. You know, this was, of course, the Beatles and all that kind of stuff. She thought that tastes were changing, and she just kind of accepted that and eventually took a hiatus, especially after the American Indian movement, which had been a traumatic experience for her as well. So she took a leave from the music industry for 15 years. From about 1975 to about 1990, around there. So yeah, so it was. It's been demonstrated to have been a White House initiative. That you know, at a later point, some of the broadcasters actually apologized to her and admitted that this, you know, they actually produced stationery, you know, like written stationery from the White House, asking that music be suppressed. And there's
Thank you, Blair. I was going to ask you, but you already answered the question about AIM, so that's fine. And how much Buffy influenced your willingness to become who you are now? Or in your development, did she add any influence? Because, I mean, this may be a small difference of an age between you and Buffy.
Well, for myself, I never really knew Buffy personally until later. But I knew her mainly through her music, and you know, her music was inspirational. I had some of her tapes and stuff like that, and they were geared toward protest and social change. And of course, in the period after 1969, I also became involved somewhat when I was at university. Became somewhat involved in in protests. For example, I was involved in protests against the Trudeau, you know, for example, with his policy. And part of the area I became involved in was in the area of Indian control of Indian education. I worked, you know, towards helping to, you know, for First Nations to take over their own education system. So that's how I got involved, for example, at the Saskatchewan Indian Federated College.
Hi. I just wanted to say two things. One, your comment about her being declared un-American and her music being intercepted. I totally believe that because I remember when, after 9/11, Bush apparently told the media they were not allowed to play Bridge Over Troubled Waters. And there were a couple of other songs that were blacklisted mm-hmm. after 9/11. It's bizarre. Mm-hmm. But music is very powerful. The other thing is about the FNUC. I think there's some wonderful things happening there. And a lot of young Aboriginal people are taking leadership on the environmental movement front. And in fact, this Wednesday they are having, I think it's Wednesday, the 12th, whenever the 12th is, at lunchtime they're having you know, someone to talk about climate change, and apparently it's a very good speaker, and the grasslands, protecting the grasslands national park. So, you know, I think Buffy would have been a really good role model and may not have been here very much, but certainly all of we old hippies know her.
mm-hmm. This will be the last question.
Thank you so much for your presentation. It's been wonderful this morning. When Buffy couldn't or didn't sing professionally during that 15 years that mm-hmm. you mentioned, can you tell us what she was doing? Was she mm-hmm. still singing? Was she mm-hmm. being an educator? What was happening?
Well, one of the things she did was she around this time was actually when her son was born. So that was actually part of the reason why she wanted to take some time off. And so the first thing that she got involved with was the Sesame Street. And Sesame Street had actually invited her to participate before they even knew she was going to have a child. And she thought that, well, since I'm going to have a child, they're probably not going to be interested anymore. But they actually said, no, that'd be great. You know, bring your baby on the set and stuff, and we'll do things. And that's so you'll actually see many of her, you know, like the episode she did have her and her and Cody, her child, with her. The other thing that she did was buy a Mac computer. One of the first, she was one of the first to buy a Mac computer, and you know, found out the digital the ability to use that for creating images and stuff. And so that occupied a lot of her time. And the other, the one sort of musical interlude in there is her winning the Academy Award for Up Where We Belong. I think it was 1982 around there. And so that's right in the middle of this hiatus period. And what happened is this fellow named Jack Nitzsche, who was he's a big producer of music scores in Hollywood, approached her and asked her to create a song or, you know, asked her to help with the song. And so that's what the result was Up Where We Belong. And so that actually ended up winning an Academy Award. So there's that, plus the Cradle Board Project, which, because Cody was growing up and she realized that there wasn't very much curriculum, that got her interested in that as well. So she kept herself busy. She's not one that would sit down and do nothing, right? She's has this real creative urge to do something all the time. Thank you. Okay.